The reading this morning is from Isaiah chapter 40, 21 through to 31, and then Luke 6, 46 through to 49. Do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood since the earth was founded? He sits enthroned above the circle of the earth, and his people are like grasshoppers. He stretches out the heavens like a canopy and spreads them out like a tent to live in. He brings princes to naught and reduces the rulers of this world to nothing. No sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, no sooner do they take root in the ground than he blows on them and they wither, and a whirlwind sweeps them away like chaff. To whom will you compare me? Or who is my equal, says the Holy One. Lift up your eyes and look to the heavens. Who created all these? He who brings out the starry hosts one by one and calls forth each of them by name. Because of his great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing. Why do you complain, Jacob? Why do you say, Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord? My cause is disregarded by my God. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. Now we turn to Luke chapter 6, the wise and the foolish builders. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? As for everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice, I will show you what they are like. They are like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundations on rock. When a flood came, the torrent struck that house, but could not shake it because it was well built. But the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. The moment the torrent struck that house, it collapsed, and its destruction was complete.
I don't always start a sermon with my own book, but a number of years ago, oh gosh, over a decade ago now, I wrote this book, The Day Is Yours, and central to the book was actually the wisdom of Jesus, that it's no use worrying about tomorrow. Today has enough worries of its own. Any takers? Matthew 6, verse 34. In other words, try to take one day at a time. But hard as you try, sometimes, as the poster says, several days have attacked me at once. I used to have that poster in my office. And then you are left with a general feeling of utter weariness. Perhaps more so now for you, for me, than we've ever known it in our lives. After this, or in the midst of this third lockdown, the weariness, I'm sure you've registered it, I'm sure you feel it in many ways. The weariness is palpable, it's tangible, you can feel it. At one level, it feels like Groundhog Day, doesn't it? In another way, it feels like a lifetime rolled into one year, or at least a decade. And when the prophet says in verse 30 here, even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall, you wonder if he's actually prophesying about 2020, 2021. Such is the general weariness amongst everyone, and such is the general weariness, or the specific weariness rather, amongst young people in particular. I've never, ever seen anything like it in my lifetime. Actually, he's not prophesying about now. He's speaking, as the prophet Isaiah, initially to the Jewish exiles in Babylon, around about the 7th century. So he's speaking to a people that feel utterly displaced. But like us, and like us, they felt so overtaken by history. I mean, we're living through history now. But they felt so overtaken by history, so overwhelmed by these powerful forces that you can't even grasp, so convinced, they were so convinced that things would never be the same again. I've heard that a lot recently. So sure that they've been abandoned by God, verse 27, disregarded by my God, where is he? No matter how many times the prophet tries to convince them of God's faithfulness, they just couldn't see it. In fact, by the time you get to verse 21, which is where we begin our reading this morning, you can, I don't know if you could hear it the way Mick read it. You can almost hear the frustration in the preacher's voice. The exasperation. Do you not know? Have you not heard? Huh? Has it not been told to you? I mean, have you forgotten? Do you not understand? Come on, guys, where's your faith? Is kind of the thrust of those verses. I thought you were believers. And Jesse is about to launch into a tirade against their lack of faith in the everlasting God. Fortunately, compassion kicks in. Thank God for compassion. And the prophet finds himself, and this is why, as Karen said, one of such a wonderful passage to preach on, finds himself once again, one more time, because this is what God is like, trying to prise them out of their despair. And the way he does this in these verses is the way I, in my own sweet little way, have tried to do this as a preacher over so many years, and that is to give them a new set of glasses, a new set of lenses, so that they might be able to see things in the right perspective. You see, if I put these, I've got my two sets of glasses here, courtesy of Daisy, who fitted them out for me at Specsavers. Should have gone to Specsavers. Oh, there are flowers after all. There we go. If I put these glasses on, let's call these my godless glasses. Godless goggles. And if I put these ones on and see the world as we often see the world these days, through a highly secular media, an education system that feels as if it's lost its rootage, a culture that is increasingly hostile, it seems to me at least, to biblical values, then it all feels pretty bleak, doesn't it? If you put these lenses on, or if you switch that radio on every morning, it all feels pretty hopeless. It feels like the survival of the fittest. It feels like the only thing that talks is money. It feels like the rich are getting away with it. But the prophet's saying in these verses, look, put a different set of glasses on. Now let me give my spiritual glasses. These are the ones that make me look clever. All right? And he said, look, don't you understand? Look at the text. He sits enthroned. Right? He, that is God. Right? First thought of the day, God. God sits enthroned above the circle of the earth. His dwelling place, his tent. Anyone got a tent? Anyone been to Millmead Mariners? Yeah? Anyone got a camper van? Bill and Angie here this morning. I was Angie just before the service. She's not actually, they've got a camper van now, but they used to have a motorhome. It's huge. I mean, massive thing. But with all respect to your motorhome, Bill and Angie, his tent, God's tent, his canopy, stretches the length of the heavens. It's huge. It dominates the whole plot and more. And when you are that high up, over the circle of the earth, says the prophet, and when you look out of that tent flap of yours, of God's, and you look down, it's a little bit like an aeroplane. Do you remember aeroplanes? Anyone remember aeroplanes? Those things that used to go in the sky? Yeah. And you look out of the window, and you're 35,000 feet up, and you're traveling, hurtling about whatever, it's 550 miles through the air, and you look down, and everything, it's just, it's actually good for you, isn't it? Everything is tiny. Oh my word, what on earth was I worrying about? They're like grasshoppers, says the prophet. Everyone just likes little grasshoppers. I mean, yeah, for sure, they have their day, they make their headlines, they have their Twitter followers, they strut around like peacocks, not grasshoppers. But in his own time, verse 23, literally, this is what he says. He appoints to nothing. And judges, he makes of no further significance. They're gone. With one breath, they wither. And like chaff, where do they go? Like the house built on the sand, isn't it? It's probably the only reference I'll give to Luke this morning. The storms come, the winds blow, it's gone. Gone. Where did that go? Now, I don't know about you, that does something to your soul, doesn't it? When you put those lenses on, when you get that perspective, it kind of puts things in their right place. It's like when you read Psalm 2. I always encourage people to read Psalm 2 from time to time. It changes your perspective. You know, the Lord looks down from heaven, doesn't he? And all these people, you know, they're fighting. They just throw off his chains. They just break his fetters, says the psalmist. Says the rebels against God. And what does God do? He looks down from heaven and he laughs. How ridiculous. Who do they think they are? I don't know about you. I find that sobering. I wasn't drunk in the first place, but I like that. And it changes. You know, we've grown up. All of us in this room have grown up in a system and in a culture. I was born in 1964, so I grew up in the secular 70s. So you grow up in a world where you believe that earth is the reality and heaven, if there is one, is a kind of tag on at the end. And you're not even sure if it's there, and it's probably pie in the sky. And the prophets say, no, you've got it all the wrong way around. Heaven is the true reality. The heavens, the glory of God, is the true reality. And earth, our little tiny little planet, is, what does Peter Kreft call it, the Catholic writer? Earth is heaven's womb. Heaven's workshop. Where God spends a brief little period of time, however long we have, working on us. Fashioning us, fitting us, converting us, saving us in order to fit us for that reality, which is the true reality. We've got it the wrong way around. That's why angels fly. Why do angels fly? Do you know why angels fly? I tell you why angels fly, because they take themselves lightly. Not too seriously. Oh yeah, but I'm a really important person. Get over it. God is the reality. And he loves us. And he calls us through Jesus. rescues us, puts us into his time. He goes on, verse 25. Look what he says. Lift up your eyes. So another eye metaphor, isn't it? Well, I made the first metaphor, the image. But then he actually says, look, verse 25. To whom will you compare me? Or who is my equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes and look to the heavens. Who created all this? Have you ever done that? Gone out at night? Susie and I, we used to go down to Dorset because there's just no artificial light around. So we used to go down the street from where her parents lived. And you look up into the night sky and it is just stunning. The night sky and the stars, and look up, he says, into the heavens, and you will discover not a multitude of secrets and horoscopes and all that nonsense and rubbish, but you will discover the handiwork of God, who created all these, verse 26, and whose nature, this is the wonderful bit, his nature is revealed. I mean, how many stars are there? Not just in the number of the stars, but in the fact that he has named each one of them. One by one, he calls them out, calling forth each by name. Isn't that awesome? As our American friends say. Isn't that cool? As our young people say. Isn't that beautiful? A universe that is not statistical, that is not clinical, that is not even astronomical, but is personal. And I, you got to read this book. I can't understand it, but buy it. It looks good on your shelf. An I, thou world. Do you know what he means by that? Jewish writer, Martin Buber. Probably the most important book of the 20th century. I, thou. What does he mean by that? He means personal. He means you're named, you're loved in Jesus Christ. Before the foundation of the world, he thought of you. You live in a world this morning that is deeply personal. I, thou. We go into a world, we come from a world this week that is deeply I, it. We're confronted every day of our lives by its, by technology, by gadgetry, by screens, by forms, by categories, by boxes, by data, by information. And no wonder we come to church on a Sunday utterly weary. Oh my gosh! I'm just an it. No, says the prophet. You're named. You're loved. You live in an I, thou world. We come to church, we gather in places like this, we come into our small groups and our houses, we pray together to remember, to rehearse that we live in a universe that the center is the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and he calls you by his Spirit, and he names you, and he loves you, and he's your shepherd. We probably have to spend a lot longer together just to get that into our hearts, because we're so beaten down, half of us. Most of us. We are known and loved by the everlasting God. And hence the question, verse 27, why do you say, O Jacob? Why do you say, O Israel? Why do you complain, my way is disregarded by my God? Do you not know, Christian, this morning I want to appeal to you through the words of the prophet. Do you not know? Those of you who are joining us, listening to us this morning, hearing this on live stream, do you not know? Have you not heard, the Lord is the everlasting God. Yes, his understanding, says the prophet, is difficult to fathom, verse 28. You can no more fathom the Lord than a minnow can fathom the tides and the winds in the tiny little creek that he lives his life in. And if you do think you fathom the Lord, it's not God. Because God is unfathomable. That's his very nature. But his unfathomableness. Can you say unfathomable? Unfathomableness? His unfathomableness is not there to make you despair, but rather to give you tremendous security that the one who is the everlasting God knows you. And he loves you. And don't try and work it out how. But just believe the revelation. He knows you by name. I'm going to say something now that is heretical. But I like it. If God stopped thinking about you, quote, he would cease to exist. Now that's a heresy. Because God would not cease to exist if he stopped thinking about you. He's the everlasting God. He can't cease to exist. But I like the heresy. A German mystic, Angelus Silesius, I read up about him this week. If God, I think he's near to what Isaiah is saying. If God stopped thinking about you, he would cease to exist. Take that thought away. He is intensely, furiously concerned and committed and faithful, not to some great big mass, but to you. He numbers the stars one by one, and if he numbers the stars one by one, how much more does he number you, name you, call you, know you? Now, by this time in the prophecy, maybe a little bit like this sermon, you maybe get the feeling that quite a few people have switched off or have left the congregation. You get a sense of that. He's trying to keep the people with him, and he's probably not doing very well. Many people, you get a feeling in this passage, are leaving because they've got no time for this revelation stuff. They want a quick fix. They want some stars in the sky to align and predict to them about their jobs and their relationships and maybe even the future of the world. There are a lot of people out there who look to the stars for that kind of security. But for those who are left, this is the last bit. The prophet here offers the most delightful promise in these last few verses, verses 29 to 31. He's appealing to them, he's calling them, he's beckoning them. Some of them have left, but a few have stayed. A few are still stuck around, staying with his message. And he says this: however weary we're feeling, and I imagine, I know there's a lot of weariness around at the moment. If you stop for a moment, if you stop what you're doing, if you stop rushing around for a moment, just stop. And if you do what? Wait upon him, which is another way of saying hope in him, which is another way of saying trust in him. He will renew your strength. Now, this is an absolute 100% money back guarantee. If you wait upon him, I don't have time to wait upon him. Well, you may need to find some time then. Because the way you're going to go, you're just going to exhaust yourself. So if you wait upon him, hope in him, you will renew your strength. In fact, if you wait upon him, he says, You will soar on wings like eagles. And the reason that you will soar on wings like eagles is because you won't be flapping around anymore. And you won't be rushing around anymore. And you won't be trying to prop everything up. And you won't be trying to spin plates anymore. But God will be taking hold of you. And God can lift you as you wait upon him so high up into the thermals of his divine grace that you will be able to travel. Have you ever seen this? For miles. I mean, an eagle that they can get that high up in the thermals can literally travel for miles effortlessly, soaring, gliding, moving, not hardly breaking into a sweat, because it is God now who is doing this through you rather than yourself. I actually saw this once. I was 19. I was in the Judean wilderness of all places. Can you believe it? I was on a 3-day trek with a friend of mine, and we went down this place called Wadi Kelt, which takes you down towards Jericho. And on the first day, I never forget it, I was 19, and I saw a golden eagle. And it was high up in the sky, and it was just soaring. I mean, it was looking for prey, to be sure, but it was soaring. Sometimes when I go to bed at night, I comfort myself with that image. It stayed with me all my life of an eagle soaring and just... by the grace of God, we can live our lives in this way. Not flapping, not distracted, not anxious all the time. Coming to the one who never grows weary, whose name is strength. He's not just strong, he is strength. He never grows tired. And allowing yourself to be caught up by the Holy Spirit. And then begin to soar. Even in such a time as this. It's possible. It's possible. Now, last time I looked, I know Karen has wings. Angel's wings. But I can't seem to pull that one off here. But I have legs. And if you wait upon him, says the prophet, you will run, even an old duffer like me, and not grow weary. You will walk and not be faint. Didn't Jesus say something like this? Matthew chapter 11. Verse 28 to 30. Come to me, all you who are weary, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and humble in heart. I love Peterson's version of this in the Message translation. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. Learn to soar like an eagle. Allow the Holy Spirit to form your life. Stop flapping. Learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. I offer this message to you this morning because I know that the weariness is very, very deep. And it's not going to be solved necessarily by one morning, but this is an encouragement. Every day this week, may I encourage you before you do anything. Certainly before you turn on the news. I stopped listening to the news about 3 months ago. Because, oh, you've got to know what's going on. No, I know what's going on. But I need to know every morning of my life that he is the everlasting God. And Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And he will be around. He was around long before we arrived on the scene, and he will be around long after we've fallen off the scene. And he's the one that will take us into glory. And we've got nothing to fear. We've got nothing to fear. You know? I don't mean to sound glib about this, but, you know, the worst that can happen is we die. When we die, I tell you what happens to a believer, we get taken into glory. And then the adventure really begins. That's page one, chapter one of the rest of our lives. And then we will see this world for what it was. Wonderful, glorious, magnificent in all of its joys and its sufferings. But it will not be worth comparing. Not even in the balance to the glory that will be revealed when Christ will come. And this is our hope. And this is what delivers us from fear. This is what keeps us alive in this life and in the life to come. And so we're going to sing this song this morning that I've asked Dara if we could sing. Lou Fellingham wrote this song many, many years ago. She's a great songwriter down in, I think she's still down in Brighton on the south coast. And it's a song that really is a prayer as well. And I want to encourage you to use this as a prayer, to still your heart and to come before God, who is strength, who is grace. The song says, he's my shelter, my hiding place. I will come to the source of all creation. I will drink from the well that never runs dry. Is that possible? Yes. Jesus talked about that. And I will draw from the one who does not grow tired or weary. At the end of this service, Karen's going to show you a clip that I've asked as well from the film Chariots of Fire, when this is read. And I think it's a great way. I think it's a great way to conclude this series. But would you like to stand? And Dara's going to lead us in this song.